It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR. And I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right. We're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
This is the Book Riot Podcast, a weekly news and talk show about what's new, cool, and worth talking about in the world of books and reading. But not today. Today, we're not even talking about what's new and cool in books. We're not even talking about books. Actually, nothing on my list is even reading related. Sometimes I've had, like, you know, my Kindle Oasis or iPad. We're doing our favorite non-book things of the year. And this is not necessarily pop culture, at least I hope not, because I've got some pretty banal crap on your show title.
I cannot wait.
Rebecca was saying just before she started to make her list and was like, it's been a year. This is even more than we did the show in 2020, and I don't remember it being quite so mundane, uninspired. Maybe because in 2020 we were being creative in our shut-in-edness and we were sort of figuring it out. In 2021, I think more of the same is my story of 2021. Rebecca, how are you feeling about your list of things to recommend to people right now?
It is, I think, less exciting than last year's list, probably for the same reason that 2020 was so much about finding creative ways to stay engaged, to feel something at all in the great storm of what 2020 was, and a lot of, like, sort of frantic, at least on my part, I felt like it's a kind of, in retrospect, frantic activity to be, you know, doing something as a distraction from the pain of just sitting down all the time, psychic and physical. And this year, especially, like, I got vaccinated in April, and so I have spent most of this year being able to do some more of the things that I would do in a quote unquote normal year than I did in 2020. But not like enough of those things to have gained it. Like, I don't have a bunch of new travel shit. New travel stuff. I don't have a bunch of new travel stuff. Or like a bunch of new yoga stuff or the things that I'm really into to talk about. So there is a lot of TV. I watched a lot of TV. There's some cooking related things. I feel like this reflects just like a very normal, kind of settled year. And that is okay with me. I'm happy to be, I guess, in some ways, I'm glad for the ways that 2020 was less interesting in that old curse way of may you live in interesting times. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's fine. My list is fine.
My list is fine too. I mean, I think 2020 being more of a adapting to a new reality, survival is interesting. We were just talking about watching Station 11. Survival is interesting. You know what's not interesting? Enduring. And that's what 2021 was about. It was about enduring. And I kind of have this guideline for recommending books especially, but I kind of apply it for the rest of the things I recommend to really everyone. I don't just recommend things that I like. I like to just recommend like the 10% of whatever. So if I read 100 books, I kind of say I can recommend 10 because I'm really giving you, you know, the top 10%. So if you experience fewer new things, you have a shallower pool from which to draw. So because I don't want to recommend all the new things that I just tried and sort of liked, I really want to recommend and talk about things that I was like, this was actually, you know, I would be surprised if someone who, you know, who this thing is for doesn't like it. And so since my pool is shallower, I've only got drips of real full-throated recommendations. So I think that's the other piece too. Just like you did some traveling, but you didn't do 10 trips where you can recommend one thing. I got to pick among these two or three things here.
That's exactly the way to think about it, that a lot of the stuff that we land on in a previously typical year for this Best of the Rest show is like driven by novelty of things we discovered in that last year that are the top 10% of the things we discovered that we really liked and that like it felt like they improved our lives in some meaningful way or were really enjoyable or, you know, just made things a little shinier and also are widely recommendable that aren't mm-hmm. just idiosyncratic. And there was less novelty in 2021, I think precisely because of what you just said, that we were doing less adapting. I carried a lot of 2020 things forward, and then I was happy to go back to some of my 2018, 2019 previous life kinds of things, but those didn't need like a new shine on them. It's an interesting spot to be in.
I didn't really group my list. We're going to kind of just take this as it goes, but first let's do a sponsor.
It's happening, readers. We have heard that you want paperbacks from our tailored book recommendation service called TBR, and I'm delighted to let you know that we're going to be in sync with your request. That's right, we're bringing paperbacks. Whether you hate carrying around bulky hardcovers, you're on a budget, you want a wider range of recommendations, or all of the above, now you can get a paperback subscription from TBR curated just for you by one of our bibliologists. Get all the details at mytbr.co. That's mytbr.co. We're bringing paperbacks.
Do you want to go in any kind of order? Mine are not power ranked. Like if I had to
mine
pick one
either.
Thing, I guess let's talk about TV first, because probably that's where we're going to have the most convergence in terms of we'll both have TV things to talk about. I'm not sure that we're going to have the same TV things. So we can take, you want to do your whole group? You want to go back and forth a little bit? I'm happy to do whatever.
Let's go back and forth. That's more fun.
Yeah. All right. So why don't you begin with a TV pick?
Okay, I loved White Lotus this year. HBO 10 episode season about rich people at an upscale Hawaiian resort and basically all the ways in which they are miserable. It was satire, but like unhinged in a way that you didn't quite know what they were trying to do, I think, until the season was about halfway done. And then all of the interviews and coverage of the show got really interesting. It was created by Mike White. It starred Connie Britton and one of the lesser Sarsgaards, Jennifer Coolidge. I know that was shady, but like Alexander Skarsgård.
It's not just the lesser. That suggests there's a whole retinue of lessers. Not just one. It's not the, it's a lesser Skarsgård.
Honestly, it's like
incredible
kind of like the Baldwin's
stuff out of Rebecca Shinsky on the top rope, body slamming the entire Skarsgård clan.
I have to confess, it's like the Baldwins. I'm not entirely sure how many Skarsgårds there are.
You got to be careful too with Baldwins. Even right. The top tier ones will shoot you, apparently. You got to watch out.
Oh, Jeff. Like Alexander Skarsgård is on Succession right now, and he is just bonkers wonderful. So it's hard to compete. A lesser Sarsgaard, namely because I forgot to Google his name, but also starring Connie Britton. And Jennifer Coolidge was the highlight for me. Actually, I have the Genesance as one of my best of the rest things of the year. That's what we're calling it in my house. It seems like this was the year that like filmmakers and TV people figured out what to do with Jennifer Coolidge, and she just got to do her thing in all the places incredibly well. So I guess this is a double one. I loved White Lotus. It was unhinged and weird, and if you need to watch something over the holiday season, I think it's a good one. If you're a prestige TV kind of person, the White Lotus is up your alley most likely. But then Jennifer Coolidge appeared in the Netflix holiday flick Single All the Way as the slightly unhinged kooky aunt who's running the Christmas pageant at the neighborhood church, and she has written the pageant herself, and it is titled Jesus H. Christ, and there's like a banner across the stage that says this, and I was like, this is someone really understood what Jennifer Coolidge is all about. So that's my 1-2 punch. My apologies to the Skarsgårds.
Don't apologize. They know.
I'm not really that sorry.
They know.
So for White Lotus and Jennifer Coolidge.
I probably listened and read more about TV than actually watched, but I did read that Mike White, my understanding is, wrote with Jennifer Coolidge in mind, like came to the project to have a place for Jennifer Coolidge. And basically HBO came to him in quarantine and says, do you have anything we could shoot in a quarantine setting? And he's like, I'd like to go to Hawaii.
So right. Like, yeah.
I mean,
genius.
Which is just an elite level move from Mike White. Nice work if you can get it. Okay. Let's see, TV. I've got two. This is going to sound like I've got layers, but I'm an onion of two layers, really, at this point, Rebecca. There's only two.
It's a good show title.
There's the layer that I like. Let's say it's best encapsulated by our mutual admiration for Ishiguro and Claire in the Sun, of strange, well-educated, well-articulated, sort of upper middle brow norminess plus, let's call that, right? It's not experimental writing, but it's top shelf, but also super commercial. And the other part of me is dad core, family core. And that's just because I've got kids, I've got a family, we're here all the time. My kids now go to bed at 8:39. I'm only going to bed at 10. I don't have time for a full movie after they go to bed. The kinds of movies I'd watch by myself are too long for me to stay up. I'm tired the next day. So I'm really, my movie watching is very tough. But my, speaking to the, I like art, I like the form, I don't mind being challenged, I like to see new worlds, a new perspective, is Reservation Dogs. It's a show on Hulu. Created by Sterling Harjo and Taika Waititi. It follows largely a group of late teenagers, early 20-year-olds. Their age is meaningfully and usefully obscure for reasons that I think are obvious when it comes to the show. The normal markers of, let's call them my own white middle-class Protestant existent, don't apply because they grow up on a Native American reservation in South Central Oklahoma. And the reservation has people of multiple tribes and backgrounds. And it's a coming-of-age story with the layers of things that people know, even if they don't know, about that life in reservations in America is no picnic by any stretch of the imagination. I grew up in Lawrence, Kansas, which is the home of Haskell Indian Nations University, and there's reservations in Kansas and Oklahoma. So we knew of some of this, and I've always been interested in contemporary representations of the life of indigenous people in America that are still around. They're still, they have hopes and dreams and fears and oppression and historical violence is present. It's not historical. And on the other hand, this was not also a complete cry fest, which you could go that way. It's light at times. It's funny at times. It oscillates wildly between absurd and I guess so sad that it's hard to imagine. I was wonderfully surprised. It's a point of view I've never seen. The young actors and actresses are just absolutely incredible. It's the kind of show you want and don't see much anymore, which is a slice of life told fairly straightforwardly with some spiritual elements that are appropriate, at least to my understanding, to the belief systems of the people involved. But also it's not, there's no sacred cows. It's making fun of itself and these traditions and these people, but also taking them seriously in a way that I think you can only really do if this is part of your background. It was a revelation to me. I hope all of these kids are great stars. I think a couple of them really could be, especially wonderful casting, unique, idiosyncratic. It's not playing for straight down the middle. It's not, I don't think it's the kind of thing that's going to be picked up on ABC, FX. I think it's on FX, which I'm watching on Hulu. It's specific. And it does the things that specificity does extremely well. So that's Reservation Dogs. Season 1's available now. There is going to be a season 2. It's 8 to 30-minute episodes, so you can take it in pieces. It's not super long. I was great. By far my favorite, most eye-opening, reminds me of what TV can do, Reservation Dogs on FX.
Oh, I wholeheartedly second that emotion. It was also on my list.
Awesome.
And I was reading recently that they've committed to having an all Native writers room for the second season. So that will be even more exciting to see. But yeah, just a tone and like there's a bite to it that you don't get in any like mainstream sitcoms. And it walks that line between funny and serious and sad and absurd, as you were saying so well. I'm so glad that you mentioned it. I'm just delighted that you had that in your life this year. It was such a good piece of TV.
Yeah, it was the right size, to be honest. There's 8 30-minute episodes. I can get through that. You know, stuff that's even, you know, I'm now, the Succession train has passed me by. I'm now 3 seasons behind. I'm in danger town with ever getting on board that train. I gotta run hard.
Maybe
I don't got much juice anymore.
Will O'Neill's razor that one and you could like take it down when it's over.
But yeah, I think that's like, that's the way I might do it. But I've never done that with TV, actually. I've never gone back. Have I? I can't think of one where I've gone.
The
anyway.
it's causing me personal pain that you're not up on Succession because the writing about Succession and the profiles of some of the performers in it have gotten so juicy and interesting and weird that I regularly have to not send them to you.
Succession discourse seems as interesting as Succession now. Like Derrida said about literature. Literature is maybe more interesting than the world. So I feel like the Succession discourse is as interesting, maybe even more so.
As I was saying, I think on last week's episode about how I really like to understand and know about the things I enjoy, going down the Succession rabbit hole of podcast episodes and great writing about it and profiles has been really satisfying. For my like perfect bite size TV experience, this one, I'm like fresh off of this one because they just wrapped up the first season, but The Sex Lives of College Girls, also on HBO Max, written, created by Mindy Kaling. I was skeptical, not that it wouldn't be good, but whether I was going to enjoy it as a person who's almost 40, watching a show about 18-year-old women coming to college for the first time. But she has done, I think, the 2021 spin on the kinds of comedies that we grew up watching that are like, I mean, it feels like a 2021 sort of version of like Undeclared or even early seasons of How I Met Your Mother, where it's like, look at these four people who are thrown together, who came from different backgrounds, and now they're all in this new situation. And like previously, it would be, you know, the new situation is they all live in New York or something. But this is these girls have come to an exclusive private college in Vermont. One is a sort of a white girl from a blue collar background from Arizona. She's very sheltered. One is a really like very rich, privileged white girl. There is a young black woman who is playing for the soccer team and having a secret affair with one of the coaches. And then there's a young Southeast Asian woman who wants to get into the college's exclusive comedy group and have a career as a comedy writer and performer. And they are roommates just assigned randomly to each other who have this wonderful like sort of odd couple dynamic, but between all four of them. I read a really interesting profile with, I believe, one of the writers who was talking about some of the choices that they made where of the four girls, the Southeast Asian character is sort of the most vocally interested in like boys and her sex life. And the show is about being a young woman in college. And so they're interested in men and their sex lives. And one of the girls is queer and she's exploring how to come out about that, but that they made explicit choices to allow the kind of character who's usually desexualized in media, which is often a Southeast Asian or Indian character, to be more interested in sex, and that the young black woman, you know, has a sex life, and this is part of what she's talking about in the show, but that she's not like hypersexualized. It's just a very normalized part of her life. And I think this is what you get from, you know, diverse writers' rooms, from women and women of color being showrunners on something like this, getting to tell this story from a perspective that's not just like the young white male perspective or the rich white girl perspective. It's really funny. There's a lot of depth to it. I was just continually surprised by the places that they let the characters go. And they explored some of the common experiences that young women have going off to college, including running into experiences of sexual assault, and how do those get addressed, and what is it like to try to speak up about them? What about when you tell your peers? Do they believe you or not? Some of those kids respond great. Some of them don't respond so well. I don't know if this is true to life of what it is to be an 18-year-old in college in 2021, but this felt like really fresh, intersectional in a way that I hadn't seen a TV comedy really do. I don't think it's perfect. I've read some interesting critiques, but it's a lot of fun. And if you needed something that you could burn through on a Saturday afternoon over the holiday break, if that's, you're listening to this and the show is your kind of jam, I thought it was really wonderful.
My next pick is the normiest pick that you can pick. It's a little show called Get Back by a little band about a little band called the Beatles. Ever heard of them? The discourse for this has been all over my personal media stream, so I don't actually know how many people care, except that the people that I am like really care about this shocking 40-year-old white guy who, with the pop sensibility, I'm not sure if. Maybe I can come at this way. Is this something you're interested in? Are you a Beatles? Like, where is your relationship to the idea of watching an 8-hour documentary about the Beatles? And maybe that I can respond to. I can be the monoclonal antibodies to try to neutralize your resistance to this. Where are you on the idea of this show?
Well, my idiosyncratic answer, if my dad had been more into the Beatles than he was into Led Zeppelin, or if this was an 8-hour documentary about Led Zeppelin or like Three Dog Night, I would be watching it.
Okay.
The Beatles did not loom large enough in my like coming up media landscape. I appreciate them, but not quite enough to watch an 8-hour situation. But I'm interested.
I think Michelle was a little bit on your tip, not that her dad was a Zepp fan versus the Beatles fan, but she's like, you know, the Beatles is cultural water, right? This is the water we're in, especially mm-hmm. in the West, if you have a pop or rock sensibility at all. And she was watching it because I was watching it, and you know, she'd read enough and blah blah blah, but she got into it for a couple of reasons that I think are interesting. And I really don't want to convince anyone to jump in the pool that's not interested in swimming around in it. But I will say this: if you know, and most people know enough about the Beatles to be interested in what actually starts happening, because it becomes essentially a family drama. In a way, because you know enough, most people know enough about who John, Paul, George, and Ringo are, and to know the cultural weight of the Beatles, to be kind of stunned that this happens. I was completely blown away. I guess I shouldn't also soft pedal my own my own reaction. Completely blown away. I was a huge Beatles kid. Like, my first tape I ever got was the Beatles 20 Greatest Hits. And on a tape, I listened to it incessantly. I could still tell you the track order off that tape. And I know all this stuff. But it becomes about interpersonal dynamics and creativity and fame all in one. And there's a couple of moments of real transcendence, like probably the most famous scene that's being talked about now that will be talked about is Paul McCartney in essentially real time coming up with the soul, the backbone of Get Back, while Ringo and George watch. And he's just trying stuff out on his little bass guitar and using the rhythm and trying out lyrics and just... What we know, even you and I that do creative stuff, is you got to have a lot of ideas, and you find one that seems more, and you follow that, and you have ideas on that, and eventually, and then you happen to be one of the greatest songwriters of all time, you get songs that come out like that. But then the interpersonal damage between John and Paul, there's big divorce energy, right? As a kid of divorce, I recognize this dynamic, and it's people that don't want to split up. And we don't want to see split up, but probably should split up. That is true for all of this. And you know what happens, and you know what happens with John later, which makes his, you know, absences in some of these scenes even more poignant. It's about music, it's about creativity, but it's also being around people that you're intimately connected with, but you can't stay the same forever, and you got to move on. I will be thinking about it for a long time. It's my single most... mind-blowing cultural document. I'll throw books in there. I'll throw Claire and the Sun in there. Some of that specificity because how much the Beatles have meant to me and how much I know about them. But that this tape exists is a miracle, right? Mm. It's just the Beatles sitting around making stuff up to see the creative process of the most famous creative people in the West in the last century. I don't know. It's like being in the inner sanctum of the Vatican or something. Like, I don't know how to describe how strange it is to see this. And it's a weird format. Like, it's three episodes and they're between 2 and 3 hours long and they're broken up in particular ways. I think Jackson did an unbelievable job. The other thing, though, that's striking is there was the original documentary cut from this footage by Michael Lindsay Hall was called Let It Be. And it was morose. And it told one version of this story. But to see the same footage reused, recut, and expanded and tell a completely different story is kind of an indictment of documentary filmmaking writ large, right?
Fascinating.
That you can tell two largely different stories using the same footage and making different editorial decisions. And with a documentary, you see it even less because it's more just about what footage you're including in what order. It's not, you're not writing the dialogue. You're just using in combinations and pieces and sequence. And you can tell a radically different story. So even if you're a fan of documentaries, just seeing what this is and then the technology, lastly, and also, I will shut up about this because it'll be as long as the documentary itself, me talking about it, is the technology that went into this of restoring to something that looks awesome on my giant 4K TV that was shot 50 years ago in like back rooms, and what they did with AI and lighting and machine learning and audio sampling. It's really pretty remarkable. And there's an element of this you would really appreciate. I think the interpersonal dynamics and creative stuff, even if you don't care about the Beatles, for you yourself, Rebecca, would be fascinating.
I was
going to
ask that question.
I would guess you would find it interesting. There will be parts where you're going to be like, come on and let's go. But part of it is, I think Jackson is trying to recreate something like just being in the room. And a lot of them being in the room was like sitting around trying stuff, being bored and frustrated. So it's trying to represent that experience.
I am sure that if people watched us have conversations about what to do with whatever project we're trying to come up with next, they would have that exact response.
Yes, yes, yes. So and there's one moment, like, spoiler alert, fast forward 30 to 60 seconds if you want to hear it, that my jaw hit the ground was, so one of the dynamics is George Harrison is thinking about leaving band and actually does for a couple of days in the middle of this. Like, he takes off, says, I'll see you around the club, guys, and like, for all I know, he's gone. And John and Paul get together to have lunch, but they tell the cameras and the audio people, don't follow us. This is not part of it. Like, they have a lot of access. Like, we got to go have a private conversation. And the producers put a mic in the flower pot of their dinner table. And so you hear them talking to each other, not knowing that they're being taped. And my understanding is none of this was in the original Let It Be, Michael Lindsay Hogg for Ethical, or the story he was trying to tell, or, you know, the version he was not included in this. And both Michelle and I had like eyes emoji in real life at each other. And you hear, and it's, I don't know. It's like Jesus talking to Judas Iscariot. Like, if you got live tape for me, and like how important the Beatles aren't to my cultural education, it's like, this exists and we can listen to it, and I probably shouldn't, but how can I not at the same time? And I can't believe they did this. So there's enough moments like that, that I do think if you're on the fence, maybe that will tip you over. I'm not trying to go convince anyone who's like super not interested and they could care less about the Beatles or whatever. Don't do it to yourself. But it is a lot more about just, hey, I recognize that song, you know, which some of these documentaries can be.
Interesting.
So, Get Back, edited by Peter Jackson, by this up and coming rock quartet from Liverpool, England, the Quarrymen. No, I'm kidding. That was the original name, the Beatles.
That sounds fascinating.
It was.
It's going.
I could talk about it for years.
It's going on my list now, and I mean, that's so interesting about documentaries. A thing that didn't make my list, but that I did enjoy watching this year, was the Jagged Little Pill. I think it's just called Jagged.
I was reading about that yesterday. Tell me the deal with that.
It's a documentary that Bill Simmons of The Ringer produced for HBO Max. He's doing a series called Music Box of like 90-minute documentaries about different things related to music. And it's about Alanis Morissette and like the explosive success of Jagged Little Pill. I watched it a couple weeks ago. I really enjoyed it. I lived through that time period. I remember Alanis Morissette. She's pivotal to my like early adolescent musical landscape. And the doc interviews a lot of other women in like alt rock who were talking about how the success of that album opened the door for other bands that were fronted by women to be successful in alt rock in a way that they hadn't been before. Mm-hmm. Shirley Manson from Garbage is in there. There's a couple other really recognizable folks from the time period. But I went into it knowing that Morissette had distanced herself from the documentary. She's participated in it. She's interviewed and featured, you know, she's all over the thing. But I hadn't gotten into the details of like, why is she distancing herself yet? So I watched it and I walked away thinking, I don't know why she, like, I don't know what's objectionable here. There was nothing in it where I thought.
It wasn't like an Alanis expose where she was merely vanilling it or something, or there's some like worm under
It wasn't an expose. You know, she was a child pop star when she was growing up in Canada, and the kinds of things happened to her that happened to 15-year-old girls who were thrust into those situations. And she hadn't really talked about it very much before, or when she had tried to talk about it, and we're talking, you know, about sexual assault and harassment. When she had tried to talk about it, you know, lots of people didn't believe her, or it had been shut down, or folks were more self-interested in furthering their careers than in investigating what had happened to her. And I think I've Googled since then, and it sounds like she's unhappy with how that was presented in the documentary, but didn't go into detail about what she's unhappy with. So all we really know is that she's unhappy about it.
But she's also not flaming it, it doesn't sound like.
She's also not flaming it. She, you know, has made some statements that she's not pleased with it, and she feels like the director, you know, did her dirty. But just to hear about the possibility of making two completely different documentaries from the same kind of footage just sort of pinged a bunch of questions in my mind about, you know, what else is on film that didn't make it into the Alanis documentary? And was there a way to take what she said and present it in a way that would have been more acceptable to her? I don't know. Mm-hmm. I felt weird about even watching it, knowing that she didn't enjoy that it was out in the world. But I was so curious about that time and her impact on music. And
yeah,
it was, I don't know, it felt interesting. That my eyebrows went all the way up to my forehead just now when you were saying the producer stuck a microphone in the plant.
I mean, like, I was going to say, and I should have said before, and maybe this is attenuates or otherwise dilutes the seeming commitment. I think if you watch the first one, and it's 2 hours, so think of it as a movie, right? You get a lot of the vibe in that one, and maybe you want to continue, maybe you won't, but you can watch the first one and get a taste of, you can sample it and say, you know, I know what Get Back is about. Now, if you want to know more and spend more time in that room and with those people in that world, go do the other two. But I think the first one with a couple hours gives you 80% of the experience to some degree, and then you can decide for yourself, of course, if you want to proceed. But there's not like a cliffhanger or something. The Beatles break up. I don't know how to break it to everyone out there right now. So I'm back to me. Let's go dadcore. I think I'm up next then. I've said to you before that Spotify, if I have to keep one content service, I'm probably keeping Spotify. That has not changed. But I said before that then if I had to keep one video service, I'd keep Netflix. Rebecca, the belt's been wrested away from Netflix. Dadcore Island, the dads and parents out there would now choose Disney Plus over Netflix. And it's not just because of the millstone of children show title and of their interest.
You said it.
Look, it just is what it is. It's a millstone, it's heavy jewelry, you know, it's either Flava Flav's clock or something trying to drown you. I don't know what to say. But Disney Plus has figured out family entertainment for the modern streaming era in that making stuff that they used to call it four quadrant programming. I think, you know, mom, dad, Jill and Jack kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Now that's heteronormative and whatever. And that's true. But the multi-generational, multi-levels of it. Do you like action? Do you like interpersonal dynamics? Do you like teenagers? Do you like adult dramas? Do you like, you know, all those kinds of things? They know how to do this now. So sometimes in one of their flagship shows, they do it all. Like I think they did it all with Mandalorian. You get Baby Yoda and you get a Boba Fett lookalike and then actual Boba Fett. And then they do it in Hawkeye a little bit differently by Haley Stanfield, who should never play Emily Dickinson ever again. Please don't talk to me about that. But a very winning personality. And then also gives you more of what you want. So my deep cut pick on Disney Plus, you know, you've heard about other stuff, couple ones, is there's a Jacques Cousteau documentary that's really fascinating. And what a cultural force Jacques Cousteau, and basically invented underwater photography. Like, this is a weird thing to think about. But before Jacques Cousteau, we didn't know what underwater looked like. Is that
that's
a weird
wild
idea? It's a wild, like invented scuba gear and camera so he could like go show people what coral reefs look like. It seems so silly, or I don't know. Like it's almost, I don't know. Underwater photography is just a thing you and I can take our iPhones out and they're waterproof and take like unbelievable 4K video of pufferfish or whatever. Jacques Cousteau is out and putting his French ass on the line and almost dying so that we can see like muddy pictures of like boring fish.
It is one of those things that has existed for our entire lifetime.
That's a good way
so
of
we never like. I just had that feeling of, oh, I never had to consider someone had to go out and invent the ability for me to see this thing.
Yeah. Fascinating idea, right? And in nascent environmentalism. And and so that's, you know, depending on your kind of kid, you might like that. So that's one pick. Go the other. So that's like the highest brow version of what Disney Plus does, a Jacques Cousteau documentary. And that's a National Geographic thing, which you get included. Then you go the other way. Not the other way, but like they did a short film called Doug Days, that each one was like a 5-minute episode based on the dog from the movie Up that has the dog collar that lets them talk. And it's just him and the Ed Asner character like living their lives in the burbs. We watched it twice, Rebecca. I don't know what to tell
you.
Great. It was so fun. We could watch it together. I mean, this is part of living at all with other people, especially in this era. But Disney Plus now has my streaming belt. I would take it. I'd pay 5 times as much for it. And if you told me I had to pay 5 times as much for it and get rid of everything else, I would begrudgingly choose it. So that's how important it is to me right now. So there you go. I think that's the end. Oh, 100-Foot Wave, HBO Max.
Oh,
I talked to you about it before.
That's my next one.
Oh, okay. You take it. I recommend it to you, so I'll
you
get
did.
Reflected credit for this.
I was going to give you the shine.
All right,
that
there
one.
You go.
Disney Plus, I think, is also probably the streaming service we got the most pound-for-pound usage out
you
of
did
this
Marvel.
Year
that's right.
We
of course.
Did the Marvel
Sorry.
Marathon. We have three left, I think, in that we started it late in the spring of 2021 when it was like, okay, we're still in our houses more than we want to be. Let's just finally cave and get Disney Plus. So that's been really enjoyable. And on Monday, I'm celebrating my birthday when my morning birthday tradition is to watch Sister Act 2 Back in the Habit. And I will get to do that on Disney Plus. Right. I won't there have to like, hunt it down somewhere to pay for on demand.
Congratulations to you.
Thank you very much. So my next pick, recommended to me by you, that is a documentary series on HBO Max, was The 100-Foot Wave, which is about a surfer named Garrett McNamara, who is a big wave surfer, like big waves.
Biggest wave surfer?
Which this, I'm guessing you recommended it to me because it rings the bells of both surfing, which I found myself fascinated by when I read William Finnegan's memoir last year, and then also people being obsessed with things and like what drives personal obsession. And this guy, like, his ability is incredible. He finds this place off the coast of Portugal that has the biggest waves he's ever found, and he like sets off to surf them, and it becomes like a whole center of new local industry, like pops up around him doing this. But before that, he's been traveling the world looking for the biggest waves, surfing the biggest waves, and setting these increasingly high and risky goals. And people get very injured doing this. People die doing this. He gets very injured and comes close to dying doing it. And over the course of the season, you see him wrestle with like, how and why is this so important to me that I'm willing to get seriously injured or die and leave my family in that situation. And he's doing some midlife adjusting kinds of things. I think of, this was one thing when I was young and unattached, and it's a different thing as a middle-aged person with obligations to family and people who rely on you, not just financially, but emotionally and spiritually as a core part of their life. And you see him struggle with his partner on screen about this. Like, why are you so obsessed with this? Why is this the most important thing? Kind of, why aren't we, the family and the rest of your life, enough for you? Why isn't that last big wave enough that you have to go keep searching for the next one? I don't know. And I'm a person who thinks a lot about like, what does it mean to be content and what does it mean to strive too much? And it was, I mean, it rang all the bells. It was fascinating. I cannot wait for another season of it. And just one, like watching a person understand themselves in a new way on like sort of in real time is like, this kind of documentary I think is the closest that we're going to get to like actually being able to like watch somebody in therapy. You know, it was really interesting watching him unearth some things about himself and really wrestle with it. And just the surfing stuff too is phenomenal.
That would be like, the one, everything you said, I agree with 1,000%. The other piece I would add is the technical piece, which is it's filmed over 10 years and professional surfers are incentivized through sponsorships to record everything because you never know when you're going to get that one wave. So you record, so they've got all this footage. You think there's a lot of footage for Jackson, the 160 hours? We're decades worth of everyday filming. And the GoPro level technology, I don't know what the cameras they're using. They put them on their helmets, they put them on their surfboards, they put them on their shoulders, on their jet skis. So you get all of these angles. Like, think of what Jacques Cousteau would have done this stuff. That's now what I'm thinking about. If he had like a GoPro and like a snorkel, he would have like revolution. He would have been James Cameron, I guess. Jacques Cousteau with a GoPro. James Cameron and Jacques Cousteau with a GoPro is an amazing found sentence. I'm going to keep that as a gem in my pocket to bring out some other time. So that, you know, if you have a, you know, you can watch on anything, but you have a big TV, you're seeing these 100-foot waves, or they're trying to serve this 100-foot wave off Nazareth. And it also, even it doesn't know it's doing this, but it finds one of the great cruxes or contradictions in liberal humanism is that even if you know you shouldn't want something, it means you still, doesn't mean you don't want it anymore, right? And he gets to this point of his head and heart, I guess, or vice versa, or different parts of his heart, or whatever internal organ metaphor you want to use, of I can't be both, right? Mm-hmm. He can't protect, you know, he can't prioritize, I guess, the enduring safety and presence for his family and do this questy kind of thing, right? To hazard his body and life in pursuit of X. And it kind of almost doesn't matter that it's waves. It could be anything, right? It could be, what's that, Free Solo? It could be climbing rocks. Mm-hmm. It could be being a rock and roll musician. It could be making macrame and selling on an Etsy with single purpose. But just because he knows that he probably should stick around for his kids doesn't help him. It makes it worse somehow.
It's like real human stuff.
Yep. Yeah.
And I found it so fascinating. I'm so glad that you mentioned how it's shot, because that just brings the like the risk and the level of excitement and adrenaline that they're feeling to life. Like, I know I know what it feels like to like jump off a thing that's a couple hundred feet tall, but watching the footage of these, like what it's like to be inside the barrel of a wave that's 70 feet over your head and all,
and it's 40 degrees, not for nothing.
Right. And you're standing on like a 9 or 10 inch wide piece of wood or whatever surfboards are made out of. I don't know. Just bonkers, like the human achievement, but also what drives us to do these things that's written in there. And I think I would love a like parallel timeline version of this that just follows his partner and family at the same times that they're where we're really seeing him. Because one of the things that Bob and I were talking about when we were watching it is like, we have sort of spouse veto on some of this stuff. Like, I would like to base jump. There's a lot of stuff that Bob's cool with, you know, riding along for me to do, but base jumping was like, no bueno, that's never happening.
Yeah.
And like the what's going on in their partnership, that she clearly wants him to stop, but there is not an agreement about like ever a veto or a, you know, I get to wave the flag and you won't keep risking your life kind of thing, was really fascinating to me too.
Yeah, it is, because she knew what she was getting into, and I don't know that she, you can't know. I think this is another, you know, all joking aside about kids too, is you can't know what it's going to be like when you're 24 and you fall in love with a big wave surfer. You don't think to yourself, I'm ever going to be the kind of person that tells him to stop or begs him to stop or can't ask or beg and be miserable that he's not stopping, which it kind of feels like where she ends up, is like she also is living with the other side of her own Gordian knot. It's like, I can't both ask him, nor can I live with this, is what she's feeling like to me at the same time. And, you know, you can't blame him or her, right? It's like when the scorpion stings the frog and the frog's like, what the hell? It's like, I'm a scorpion, dude. I don't know what to tell you. There's an element of that that is so fascinating. Because I think there is this sense of, in this new self-help therapy world, and it's all great, I subscribe to all of it, but there is some place of understanding you can get to that resolves it all, right? And that if you do it all right, you will be over here and you will have it all figured out and now you're good. Well, I think for some of us, what we have to realize, you may figure it out and not be able to do anything about it. So you get to live there in your conflict, and that's what it is. So live the questions is Rilke's kind way of putting this. Mm-hmm. The other way of putting this is, you can't have it all, tough shit, welcome to Earth. And I, you know, that's, I don't know if that's helpful to be reminded or not, but it feels salty in the fact that, like, well, it's not a good flavor, but it's an intensifying flavor.
Yeah.
Yes, that is what it's like in any scale of these kinds of things.
That's true. And the rest of that Rilke passage, because I used to read this to yoga classes, is live and love the questions, because there isn't an answer right now. But basically, to paraphrase, even if there were one, you wouldn't be able to handle it.
There it is. That's right.
And I think that's exactly right for the folks in 100 Foot Wave, but also like there's just so much human condition stuff. That's what makes any of these documentaries great. Right. It's like, I'm never going to try to go surf a 100 Foot Wave, but I think we all know what it feels like to be driven by something or really, really desire something that you can see is dangerous for you in some way. It might not be physical harm, but to be drawn towards that anyway, and that push-pull of trying to get yourself into this, the place that you know is probably better for you, but how difficult that can be. And I think you're right about the myth of landing in a spot where like magically you've achieved enlightenment and now it's all over, when really, and one thing that McNamara illustrates so beautifully, and I think unintentionally in the documentary, is we all kind of have the one problem. And if you're living right, you at least are taking different approaches to the problem over time rather than running in the same circle repeatedly.
Yeah. Right.
But we've all got the one thing, and his trying to work out the one thing in this is, I felt really grateful to get to watch a person deal with their stuff over 10 years. And it
comes at it sideways, right? Because I don't even know that the documentarians would have known that, like, the psychological, like the tension between two interesting and defensible positions. That's what makes for a good. In fact, Get Back is a lot the same. But they all want to be the Beatles, but they all are so tired of being the Beatles and want to go on their own thing. Rationally, logistically, you're the Beatles, man. Why would you break up the Beatles? On the other hand, you hear George Harrison saying, I've got all these songs in me and I get two cuts per record with you guys. And you're the greatest of all time. But if I'm third, shouldn't I, you know, it's like both of those things are right, George. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I think that's the answer to, should I stay with the Beatles or break out, break off on my own? The answer is yes. And mm-hmm. that's what Rilke is saying. It's like, what are you going to do with your yes to both questions that seem diametrically opposed? So it's a similar thing. Let's get out of TV. But before we do that, sponsor break. Do you have a food section at all? Where can we group? Do you have any food things? I got a couple of food things.
I do. Okay. I have a couple food things.
Go forth with food to start.
All right. My favorite cookbook of the year was All About Cake by Christina Tosi.
I'm listening.
Of Milk Bar. I loved this. I spent a lot of 2020 upping my baking game. And then at some point, I saw Tosi on a Netflix documentary revealing how she does those really beautiful layered milk bar cakes.
Where, they are wonderful cakes.
Right? They're not iced on the outside, so you mm-mm. can see the layers of cake and then the icing between the layer. And there's always like something else going on in there for texture. And I was like, how does she get those to like be so flat and stacked and so perfect? And I saw her do this and I was like, oh, now I see. So All About Cake does, there's like sheet cakes, there's even a section on like mug cakes and stuff you can make in your slow cooker. There's cupcakes, like stuff for all occasions, but the real Christina Tosi signature is that a cake has a cake, an icing, and some sort of like filler situation, that like a crumble or something that gives it texture, and often like a syrup that's soaked into the cake that keeps it moist and gives extra flavor. So there's a lot of elements. If you are a person who likes a like a complex baking situation, this is the way to go.
I got the Milk Bar cookbook or the baking book, the original, and I was like, this is too fiddly for my skills. This is this looks great, but I need a different lifestyle to be able to handle this of some kind.
Yeah, this is like, I'm down with a baking project that spans over 2 or 3 days. Like, it might not take all of the day, but you're spending some time on 2 or 3 days making and assembling cakes. There's a sheet cake section that is a little, you know, more straightforward. I love these because the flavors are really delicious and presentation is impressive. It doesn't feel like you're sacrificing either of them. And the book gives you, you know, how to do the sheet cakes, how to do the cupcakes. But then if you Google your way to watching Christina Tosi do her own layer cakes, which is functionally, instead of putting stuff into round cake pans, you bake all your cake batter on like a big flat sheet cake and then use a 6-inch or 8-inch round to cut the circles out and make those like beautiful stacks.
Yep.
For that inside a cake ring. And I have practiced this technique and revealed it for a couple friends' birthdays and like a few special dinners over the last year. And it just looks fancy. I just feel good about, like, I've been baking cakes for a while for people I love. I just feel like I am showing them a little extra sparkle, and it just feels nice to be like, look at this pretty cake. And they taste really, really good. I find them to be it's fussy. I mean, it's just fussy.
Okay. I'm going to use fussy as a segue to my thing. I affirm and support fussiness, optimal fussiness of all kinds.
Optimal fussiness. There are some many things in my life I refuse to be fussy about, but I am so here to be optimally fussy about cake and spending a day making a cake for someone that you love and then getting to see their face light up with how cool their cake looks is intensely satisfying. At least for me. So All About Cake. Good project if you're going to spend most of the winter indoors.
Yeah, mine was a summertime project I've talked to you about. I may have mentioned it on the show. I did tiki this summer. I've always liked tiki.
Yeah.
I got into tiki drinks, which is a, let's call it, less than ideal term for a style of American cocktail making that comes out of a bastardized sense of Polynesian tradition. I got into the history of it. It's really fascinating, and it comes out of prohibition and rums and citrus juices from California and rums from the Caribbean. Long story short, I like a fruity drink, and this is taking the fruity drink game up a notch. And I don't know if you want to call this a hack for people out there that want to mess around with this. I don't think, unless you want to get into it, and one of Tiki's signature elements is fussiness. Like, part of the fun is the fussiness of like making the garnish and finding all the rums. And that is fun if you're into that. But if you want just something that feels a little fancy, if you want to cut your cake out but not do all the other stuff, like Rebecca said, this is different, I've got two recs for you. Don't get the imitation stuff, but you can go online. This is the other thing about online. You can find the ingredients now, which wasn't true in like the 70s and 80s. But get yourself some real cinnamon syrup. So it's a simple syrup with cinnamon in it, like real cinnamon, not the New Jersey flavor packet stuff like you see in Torino that you put in coffee, like real cinnamon syrup. And then the other one is passion fruit syrup. Don't try to make it. Don't just passion fruit syrup. Buy it in a bottle. Take those two things and combine it with any real citrus juice you want, fresh squeeze, do it yourself. Don't take a shortcut. That's my other tip. Fresh citrus, cinnamon syrup, passion fruit syrup, and then tequila and rum that you like. Put it together. It tastes like vacation. That's what I realized what I was looking for. Mm. I'm tasting like I'm not here. I'm looking for escapist liquid. That's what all I'm looking for when it comes to tiki. And those two things, I put them in different combinations, different rums, pineapple. I juiced a pineapple, Rebecca. Did I tell you this?
I think you did, yeah.
I cut it into 16ths and put it in my hydraulic thing. And, you know, it was good. Is it worth doing? Probably not. Is it fun? Yes. But orange, I mean, just take orange juice, like good fresh squeezed orange juice, a couple of fresh squeezed limes, shot of cinnamon syrup, shot of passion fruit syrup, two shots of tequila, and you, my friend, your liver thinks you're on a beach. Let's put it that way. So tiki is great. I don't know what else to say. That's my food pick. That's all I've got for food.
I love this fussiness from you. And as the happy drinker of a couple signature Jeff O'Neill cocktails.
Oh yeah, you had him live and in person one. Even.
I have, and go. I think maybe it was a margarita this fall when I was visiting, but you made me a blood orange situation that I think about fondly.
Blood orange is good. If you can find a Mineola, which is a hybrid orange, I recommend that. Cactus pear is great. Tastes like banana, but also tastes like orange at the same time. We can do this. I don't need to do this because it's hard to find. But thank you for the compliment. I will take that in the good spirit with which is it intended. Okay, now we're out in the... Do you have another food or where are we into wild card territory?
I have one more food thing. Just briefly, King Arthur Baking makes these little things called jammy bits that are... I know... It's wonderful. They're called jammy bits. I definitely have a song about jammy bits that I sing in my house when I use them. But you can get them in like raspberry flavor. They had apple cinnamon this fall. And if you're tossing them, if you want something that's like a little fruit bit in a scone, but you don't have either access to the fruit that you want at the time, or you want it to be much easier than like chopping up and drying a bunch of fruit, jammy bits are the jam. I did those. I tossed them into scones that I was making this fall. And these are now like my household favorite thing that people still talk about is that I made these apple cinnamon scones that tasted like autumn in a scone with little jammy bits. They're tiny. They bake up. They get juicy and squishy inside whatever, you know, scones, whatever cookie you're making them in. But they're just easy and wonderful. And I love them. So that's jammy bits.
Cool. I think almost everything else on my list falls into the category of researching things to come. So I'll start here. The big sort of financial transaction of the year for my family was we got a new car after 12 years. And since I am a researcher by nature and I'm stuck at home all day, I did maybe more research than is healthy and productive for a male person or any human of any gender or you know, whatever, wherever you fall on whatever spectrum you're in. Yeah, there's no wire cutter for cars, by the way, which is maybe something we should talk about in the, as a business idea. But the only thing I can recommend all... Well, let me talk about process, okay?
I'm so ready for this. And I'll be back in 12 minutes.
As far as I can tell, the process of buying a new automobile has not changed since 1954. You go in, everyone knows the sticker price is not what you end up paying. There's a bunch of stuff in there. It's very human, handshaky, whatever. The particular version of this I walked into, my partner and I and our family, is that... This is not negotiating down. It's that there was a supply side thing and everyone is above sticker prices. They call it a market adjustment. So it's like, okay, here's what the manufacturer suggested price is. And in normal times, you'd pay something under that because that's how they make you feel like you got a good deal and whatever. But now we're paying over it. Took me 6 months to get around this idea. Michelle's like, just buy the damn car already. That's the price. What are you doing? Come on, man. Okay, got through that. Well, then you got to negotiate the price of your trade-in. Okay, well, I need this. So... In classic negotiation style, one thing that can get you into trouble if you're negotiating two things at once, right? And of course, the thing you're really negotiating, the big piece is the purchase price of the new vehicle. And then the second thing is what trade-in you're getting. And you already know when you're trading in that you're not getting premium price because for the convenience of doing it all in one transaction. But if you're solving for the price of the big thing, you will make a mistake on not caring enough about negotiating the small thing. So we can talk dollars here. It doesn't really matter. We had the car for 12 years. The trade-in offer was $1,000.
Okay.
I go on Kelly Blue Book, KBB.com, high recommendation. You can see what the market rate for your car is. And it should have been more than that. Should have been like $4,000. And I was like, okay, here's what KBB says. Trying to use an external principle, Rebecca. This may sound familiar. Mm-hmm. Like, we can only offer you $1,000. Then they start negging the car, you know, in this old thing. It's got this and it's got this. I know it's a 12-year-old Colt. Why do you think I'm getting rid of it? I don't like the car. I know all the things. Doesn't matter. I plugged it in. That's how many miles it has. They're like, no, they don't want to deal with it. So I'm like, you know what? This is the 21st century. There's got to be a better way. CarMax.
Mm-hmm.
I filled out a form on CarMax. I told them the truth. Warts and all, they gave me a quote. I said, that's great. That's within 10% of the Kelley Blue Book. I take it down there, made an appointment. And they're like, we have to do an inspection, make sure you tell the truth. I fully expect that's where the left hook to come in. It's like, well, then they start the negging process. And well, you did, you know, it's actually, and boy, there's more stains than you thought. And, you know, people don't like wagons and whatever. Nope. They said, yeah, checks out. Here's the check right there for the price you thought. And we're out the door in 45 minutes. CarMax, to sell your car. Let's go, folks. You don't have to live this way anymore.
I've had wonderful experiences at CarMax as well, and they are based here in Richmond.
Oh, is that right? Congratulations to you. That's fantastic.
Yes. Yeah. I'm happy that you had that experience, because everybody needs a reparative car shopping moment.
Yeah. Yeah. So
to CarMax.
That's another tip. Separate your negotiations. Don't do them both at once. Negotiate them separately if you can. That's how they get you. Okay. Where do you want to go next?
Okay, this is just our lifestyle thing. I'm a woman of a certain age. This year I discovered bringing a robe with me when I travel.
What?
I don't know where the idea came from. It might have just been one of those like random moments where I was packing for a trip. But Bob and I went to Switzerland in the fall. We were going to be gone for 10 days in a variety of hotel situations. And I was packing up my suitcase and I was like, you know, what if I just bring my robe? I have a robe I love. It's not super fluffy. If you are looking to shop for a robe for someone, it is the robe from Luynia, Luyna.co. And I'm so glad I did. I would get up in the morning and put my robe on while we had coffee in the hotel room. And then when we got back from our adventures and I took a shower, I would sit around in my robe. I'm like, I don't like pajamas when I'm traveling, like, or extra changes of clothes. It was like, all I want to do today is put on the clothes I have to wear to go do the thing and then come back to the hotel room and be in the hotel room and then do the same thing in the morning. And I just like the luxurious feeling of a robe. I feel a little bit ridiculous. I've been on a few trips since we got back from this, and I feel a little bit ridiculous every time that I am packing up my robe. But then when we were in a hotel room in Columbus, Ohio over Thanksgiving. I, you know, went on a trip with Amanda earlier this month to Palm Springs. I brought my robe with me. It's so great. It's just nice.
Hashtag robe life. I love this idea. Can I confess something to you about robes?
Please. I mean, absolutely.
What if you said no? I know you'd been kidnapped. That's your sign.
Right.
No, Jeff, no, I would like not to hear about your robe thoughts.
This is the one prompt where I don't want to hear what other
I like a robe. Here's
say.
My issue with robes. And this may be we're bridging off into half-baked idea land. I feel like the seam for the robe should be more offset than it is. Because right where the seam is, I don't need to tell you about how human males are put together. The part that is least covered by your standard robe seaming is most likely to make an appearance in a way that, you know, if you wear an undergarment, you know, but if I'm getting out of the shower, I'm at whatever, that's, this is the part of the B-52 I want armor on. You can leave the wings and I just needed to, just, can we put it somewhere else? So that's, okay, show my hip. That's fine. Put the cinch there. I need my robe cinching to be like rotated 90 degrees and put it on the side.
Riddle me this, because maybe this is a difference in gender clothing construction. Have you not had a robe that has an interior tie?
An interior tie? No,
yeah,
I don't believe so.
Okay, so in many
women's
robes...
Where does it go? Does it go... Is it groinal? Is it groinal tie?
Okay, right. This is weird since we're doing audio medium here.
Right.
But, you know, like you got your arms slipped into your robe.
I know where my arms are, thank you.
Let's say you're going to take the left side of the robe and fold it in against your body before you fold the right side over to belt it. The left side... on a lot of women's robes, has a little tie, and there's a matching tie on the inside of the right like hip seam. Hmm. So when you fold that left piece in, you can tie it, you secure it to the other side of the robe. And then by the time you fold the right side of the robe over to like belt the whole thing, it can only open so far.
Hmm. So I might be behind on my sartorial innovations in robe land. I think it's possible. I haven't experienced something like that. Maybe, you know, maybe it's like the Jacques Cousteau of robes. Like, you know, we don't have to live like this. We don't, you know, rather than exposing things, we can hide it. I'll look into this, but I do like a robe. I think they're a wonderful idea. I think robes should be more common. I also don't feel like the kind of guy that's earned robe. I don't know what that means about me. You know, like what Seinfeld says about having orgies, like I need a whole different wardrobe. There's a part of me that's like, I'm not a robe guy. I don't do robe things. But on the other hand, it's a garment blanket, which I'm into.
It is.
And I need to do some work on myself to get past this, because I do think robes are a wonderful solution to many of life's problems.
Hashtag robe life. I just feel a little bit more glamorous drinking my coffee in a robe than in whatever else I would be running around in the morning. And I don't know, it makes me feel nice when I'm traveling too. Like, I live the robe life at home, but taking the robe life on the road with me felt like I leveled my game up.
I don't think we've talked about travel planning at all. I didn't travel. Mm. Well, that's not true. My family and I drove to Yellowstone. That was great. Yellowstone's great. Doesn't need recommendations like recommending the Beatles. And I would never recommend a Beatles property because that's too basic and obvious for someone like me. But I did a lot of future travel looking. And I don't know what you use, but I got down deep into the world of travel optimization stuff just because I found it fascinating. There's lots of tools. Long story short, it seems like once you'll go through that world and come out the other side, that if you're researching flights, hotels, go to hotels.google.com or flights.google.com. Mm-hmm. They're incentivized differently than the Expedias, Orbitzes, whatevers of the worlds, hotels.com, to just be a tool that you use rather than get a better deal from Hilton because their search results are at the top. They have a really cool calendar feature for both of them where you plug in the dates, but I'll show you the prices for the surrounding dates for both of them so you can see, well, what about this? Put in your filters. Very humane experience. Feel like you're getting a better deal. I did feel like for the trips that I didn't take but did research, I would have gotten the better deal by researching this way. It just felt sane. And it's one of those things where, since Google's monetization strategy is like they kind of don't care about like whatever 3% commission rate that JetBlue is going to give them, they just made the best tool that they themselves would use. It's kind of great. So both of them are just hotels.google.com and flights.google.com. They're not super fancy, but maybe you don't want that necessarily in Trivago and all these places where you're getting bundles and deals and all that stuff. Like, this is just the straight dope of the best prices for the flights you're looking for and the dates and places you're looking for. Mm-hmm. It was refreshing after all these maximums and get your rewards and, you know, go take this one. And it's like, no, just give me the thing, man. I'm a man with limited time, and I need to figure out. I can't just go to Singapore because it's a cheap deal today. I got windows I'm trying to hit.
Yes. Okay. I'm a proponent of that method and also a vocal advocate of book directly through the hotel or the airline.
They'll care about you more than if you got your Orbitz reservation number or whatever.
You're least likely to get bumped if something happens, if the hotel overbooks or if the flight is oversold. I live the Delta life. They've been good to me. I have a lot of Delta miles, so that's how I go into travel planning. But I also subscribe to an embarrassing number of travel publications.
Oh, we meant to talk offline about that at some point. We can protect ourselves a little bit.
My travel thing, other than taking my robe with me this year, was I think I did finally find my platonic ideal of travel toiletry holders. And this is a journey.
Toiletry holders.
Like, you know, lotion bottles and shampoo bottles and stuff. Like,
okay.
Because I've had a bunch of different ones that have promised to be leak proof and that have been lies.
So it's not the thing you put the bottle in. It's the thing you put the balm or salve or tincture in.
Okay. Correct. Yeah. Okay. Like whatever you decant your big thing of shampoo into so that you can take 3 ounces or less of it with you when you
know how long one 3 ounce bottle of shampoo gets
okay.
me?
Body wash, Jeff. Let's go with body wash.
Okay. That's fair. It's all one. I do a 3-in-1. It's good for all surfaces.
Gonna need a minute for that sentence.
What are the three?
She did not wonder that.
She did not want to know. Okay.
This is it. The limit of my curiosity.
Okay. All right. So you found. Okay. So these are bottles or liquid
Okay, so this is the company. Yeah, these are shapes. The company is called Cadence. The website is keepyourcadence.com. And they are little hexagonal, like I think they're plastic containers. They're made of recycled materials. It's a sustainable thing. The business is owned by women of color. The lids, in my experience now on several trips, are actually leak proof. And there's the lids are kind of they screw on, but they're magnetized to the bottles as well. That must help with the leak proofness.
Okay.
But they also then each little hexagonal pod, I think it holds about 1/2 ounce, it is magnetic against all the other ones. So you can fit like 15 of these into your quart size Ziploc situation. And they stay together if you put them out on a hotel room counter. The lids are labeled. They come in these nice pastel colors. You can pick which color you want. You can select pre-labeled ones for like shampoo, conditioner, sunscreen, or you can do a custom label of whatever stuff you're putting in. They actually work. It feels like a revelation to me that I can go on trips now. I hope that I don't have to like retract this in a year because they start leaking. But I've taken them on several trips. I've checked them in bags. I've carried them on. I've taken them on a road trip. So they've been through like all of the possible scenarios, and I love it. For like a 4-day trip, you don't need 3 ounces of shampoo.
Let me tell you.
You don't need 3 ounces of shampoo, like maybe in a year.
I think on a trip to Mars, I'm taking a 6-ounce bottle. You know, 6 years round trip, I'm covered.
Right. So I really also liked, it just maximizes the space that you can use. And I was like, right, why have I, it's never really occurred to me that I had this 1 3-ounce bottle of travel shampoo that has lasted me for like all of my trips for a year. So you do have to do more refilling. And there's not like a built-in squirty mechanism. When you're in the shower, you have to unscrew the little cap from the hexagonal pod and like either tip it into your hand or use your fingertip to scoop out some of the product. But whatever, for the just peace of mind that I'm not going to open my bag and find that like
there you go,
my face cleansing oil leaked all over everything else, and now it's a giant mess inside my toiletries, and then you have to rinse off all your toiletries.
You'll pay a little getting out tax to make sure it stays in, right? Because your failed state is like, if your failed state's real bad, if you're, you know, whatever L'Oreal hibiscus, whatever blows up in your spot in your carry on in Atlanta.
The annoying factor of that is so high. So these are more expensive than the little plastic 3-ounce bottles you could buy at CVS. And so far, I have found them to be worth the money. So
that reminds me of my last recommendation. It's called male pattern baldness, everyone. I suggest everyone try it. Look into it. I know it's not something, it's not for everyone. And it's not something most people would choose. But let me tell you, there are advantages that pay dividends over time in a way. Sticking your pinky finger in your hexagon tube to take care of your hair. What have we become, Rebecca?
It's
what
good
is this
for
world?
All three surfaces.
What has the world come to here? That sounds great. I can see that it solves a real problem for sure in this modern world. You know, sometimes I listen to a lot of music. This is probably my worst new music year of all time.
Me too, actually.
I do have one music pick, but it's an old one. I do like Christmas music. You know, my kids started asking, can we start the Christmas music? But I, being the stalwart, stoic father figure, required that we wait till the day after Thanksgiving, of course, to start. And I have a master list, and I do try to look for a couple new songs a season to put on there. So it's not always the same, but it still retains the core. We try something else. Optimal fussiness, Rebecca. Hashtag. I picked my pick. I picked two songs off of Willie Nelson's holiday album called Pretty Paper that went on my list this year. It's like a 1976 album that I forgot I even knew. But the title track, I believe, is an original composition. It's just a little different. It sounds great. It's like a little two-step waltz. It sounds like holiday time. It's about, you know, nice things hanging around. Willie's a nice addition to my, you know, Sinatra, Nat King Cole, Ella Fitzgerald. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a little bit of a curveball in there. Like with most holiday albums, the album's called Pretty Paper, and the title track, which I think is the best one, is also called Pretty Paper. With most holiday albums, you got to be very careful, because usually the whole album, you don't want to listen to the whole thing, because there's usually a couple of clunkers on there. Anyone trying Frosty or Rudolph is a disaster. Stay away from them all. Carol of the Bells, not a shot. Keep it off, Little Drummer Boy. All a disaster. You got to know what you're doing when you pick these things. So I'm not recommending the whole Willie Nelson album. You'll know the ones. I love Willie. I'm not going to slander him. This is a pro-Willie podcast from me. But pick your spots with Pretty Paper by Willie Nelson. I think you're going to find some stuff that adds a little bit of a mix to your holiday Christmas listening. A little website called Spotify, you might have heard of it.
Pretty Paper by Willie Nelson podcast. Do you know the album that he did with Norah Jones and Wynton Marsalis?
I know all the Willie Nelson ones, the good and the bad. Yes, I do know. This. Yes. That's a good one. Also, I got to steer you away from Norah Jones's holiday record that came out this year. I'm sorry to say, I didn't know
there was a Norah Jones holiday record.
It's a very tough beat for Norah, who I like a lot. I don't know what they were thinking. It was not what she does well. Let's try again, Nora, is what I've got to say. I'll try the next take of this. Well, so there you go. I think that's it for me, actually. Okay. I kind of ended up there. Do you have anything else you want to mention and squeeze in here at the end?
I also had less new music in my life this year. We're not getting out of this episode without me mentioning Counting Crows.
Why are we mentioning them now?
Because they had a new EP this summer called The Butter Miracle.
God. Okay, this is your time.
It's four tracks. It's like 20 minutes long. They all sort of run together. Well, they're intended to run together. The songs sort of create a story. And just sonically, it feels closer to some of their earlier albums than the stuff they had been doing recently. So it was like I put it on around the house and Bob was like, is this a Counting Crows song that I don't know? And it sounds like it could be from one of the older albums, which I thought was cool. They did like a tie-in video thing with it. That doesn't really matter, but I just enjoyed the, jam of some of these tracks and that they sounded like older Counting Crows songs. My one true love of the year, though, is the Bruno Mars Anderson .Paak
collab. I did listen to some of this. I did like this, too.
Yeah, An Evening with Silk Sonic. I am intensely into this 70s vibe that Bruno Mars is trying to bring back. Give me a velour jumpsuit, I am ready. But Evening with Silk Sonic, it's funny, it's cheeky, it has the sexy moments and the silly moments and just a really wonderful 70s vibe to it. I'm gonna be cooking to that all winter. That was my album situation. And then my music adjacent recommendation this year is the Band Splain podcast hosted by Yossi Salek, which each episode is about a band that people get super into. Most of them are either cult classic bands or not quite big, huge bands, but she has an episode on Dave Matthews Band, so she's not just doing the culty following ones. But it's a 3-hour episode with her and someone either from the music criticism world or someone that she is aware of. Sometimes there are other musicians who is also super into that band. And they go through the band or the musicians, basically a whole catalog over the course of a couple of hours, talking about the person of the band came on to the scene, what the significance was that broke them through, what are some of the big songs, what are some of the album tracks that never made it to the radio. If you're really into this band, why do you love them? There's a 3-hour Reba McEntire one recently that was amazing. And I just enjoy that super deep dive because books are the media that I know a whole lot about, and will be super into. But I really, really love music and I really love TV and movies. And I like to read and learn about them. I'm not going to host 3-hour podcast episodes, about Reba McEntire, but I am quite happy that someone did so that I can go through and be like, oh, I did like that band. And I've listened to a few that were about musicians I'm not terribly familiar with, but I knew a couple tracks and liked them. And that's been a really fun way to discover this is why people like Fish. I'm probably never going to become a big Fish fan now. That ship has just sailed for me, but it was cool to listen to someone who was really into them and could talk about the progression of that band's career and how people
the jammy bits,
them.
If you will.
Jammy bits!
There you go.
Yes!
Yeah, bring it all back around.
Bringing it all back together.
It does seem like last couple of years that the music podcast has really flourished, and it makes a lot of sense, right? The medium is audio, and it's so uniquely well-suited to be the good subject because music is famously hard to write about, of course, because it's nice to have it there. And then I think with Spotify and some of the other deals, people are more comfortable or more able to legally use the music and talk about it without getting sued into oblivion or otherwise worrying about it. So I listen to, it's one I dip in if I see it's a record I know. It's on Spotify. I think it's a Ringer. Yeah, it is a Ringer joint because the main host, Shea Serrano, writes for the Ringer sometimes. But it's called No Skips, and they take a hip-hop album usually and go through it track by track and have a fun time talking about it. So if they're picking up Doggy Style from 93, I'm checking that out, or The Chronic. One of the ones that I know some degree. There's a lot I don't know. But it's one of those things where the medium and the content so naturally fit that people are really exploring what's possible in ways that usually if you had a documentary, you'd have to have all the video, right? You'd have to have video of them playing. Well, you don't need the video. You just need the songs. You don't even need something special. It's everything everybody knows already. So music podcasts have been great out there. I think that's it for us. You can email us about the parts that didn't scandalize you, or did, I guess, podcast at bookriot.com. That's going to be pretty much it for us for now. You might hear an announcement in this feed for something else later. Don't want to tip my hand right now, but you might get a tip off of something else that we're going to be doing, maybe a couple different things, actually, now that I think about it. You can find show notes, podcast at Book Riot. Nope, that's her email address, Rebecca. bookriot.com/listen. We'll put, I guess, the stuff we put in here. They might be linked or not. You can Google, you know, if you see it, you'll remember it. I do not promise it'll be in the order we talked about them or attributed to the person who actually said the thing. interiorrobeties.org. I just bought that domain.
If you know of men's robes or unisex robes that can change Jeff's life, let us know.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like my car where I was kind of like being thrown into the future, 12 years of automotive innovation, one fell swoop, where it's like, you know, heated seats are great. So maybe the heated seats, interior robe ties are the heated seats of robes. Like they've been there, they've been out there, but I've been driving old robes around like an animal and I just haven't caught up and it might just be fine. I just haven't really thought about it.
You don't have to live this way.
No, we don't. We don't. Thank you, Rebecca. This was a lot of fun as always. Yeah. May you all have a wonderful turning of the calendar and may your and our next year have a deeper pool of idiosyncratic things to recommend to each other.
Yes, yes.